You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Homefield Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another victorious episode of Doing the Work, the first show on the Back Home Network dedicated to covering IU women's basketball. Today is our 113th episode recorded on Saturday, March 23rd, 2024. I'm your host, Kathy Amos, and I'm joined today by our special guest, Andy Bottoms. And today we will be breaking down your fourth-seeded Indiana Hoosiers NCAA tournament win, 56-89 over the Fairfield Stag. And with that win, it brings the record to 25-5. But as usual, we will start our show the way we do every show, and that's with our Hoosier Proud banner moment. And, you know, in a game where I thought, Andy and everyone, I thought that first half we looked a little taken out of what we normally would do. We felt, to me, really sped up. We weren't quite getting it into McKenzie. We definitely weren't hitting threes. I mean, we shot only like three of 12 in the first half on those three-pointers, and that definitely is not our normal game. You know, and when our team is firing on all cylinders, it really means that we're getting it to McKenzie and we're hitting the outside shots and dictating really what we want to get. And I thought they came out after halftime and made some really great adjustments. And the banner moment for me came in that third quarter at around the 5:25 mark. When Sarah Segalia got the ball, she drove the ball really hard down the lane and ended up getting fouled. And she just came up really fired up after that. And she started, you know, pumping her fists and yelling at the crowd and got the crowd even more into it. And then she came and makes both those free throws. And then on the other end, she goes down and gets a defensive block as well to kind of end that run. And to me, I picked that as my banner moment because I thought that it was really indicative of a lot of the emotion we saw from Sarah today that bled over into the crowd and really bled, I thought, into our team as well in that third quarter, where we would end up, you know, winning that quarter quite handily. And I think that's where we opened it up. And we won that quarter 26-15. And I think that was a really huge pivotal play for me and my banner moment, because I think it really was indicative of what we saw from the team in that second half. So today, our banner moment, as always, is brought to you by Homefield Apparel. Homefield Apparel is the presenting sponsor on the Back Home Network, who also includes the Assembly Call and Crimson Cast. Homefield is constantly releasing new schools or updating their products for schools in their existing line. And it is probably one of their busiest months right now of the year during March. So hopefully you can find something out there that you really want. And if not, you can find something for your friends. And if for some reason it's still your first time purchasing from Homefield, you can use our promo code HOME23 to get 15% off your entire order. And again, that promo code is HOME23 for 15% off. The website is homefieldapparel.com. We're one for the team. Okay, so Andy, I was going to hit just a couple of quick news headlines to keep everyone up to speed on other things that happened since the Big Ten tournament. And mainly, we had 9 players on the winter academic All-Big Ten list for this semester. And then McKenzie Holmes was named to the All-American third team for the Associated Press. This was her third straight year on that third team All-American. And then the USBWA named her to the second team All-American, and that was her second straight. But with that, Andy, let's kick it over to you. What kind of thoughts you have about today's game?
It was, I felt like in the beginning of the game, I texted you this during that it seemed like IU was playing more the way that Fairfield wanted the game to be played in terms of taking quick threes. And IU can do that and can make those shots at time to time, but they really kind of fell for a little bit into the way that Fairfield wanted to play. And then basically whatever was said during the media timeout in the second quarter pretty much set the tone for the rest of the game. They really came out after that. They were down 5 at that point. It was 31-26 midway through the second quarter, and IU outscored them 63-25 the rest of the game. And that really started the latter half of that second quarter. They outscored them 12-3, got the lead back. And really that started in a lot of ways with some really good interior defense. That was when the blocks began. I thought Jules had a couple of good plays where she just stood her ground inside and made him take tough shots. Got a couple blocks, like I mentioned, and really thought that springboarded things. They obviously played well offensively there, and there was another drive that started the scoring of that 12-3 run that was Chloe basically saying, screw it, I'm going to take the ball and drive right down the middle of the floor. She got fouled, only made one of the two free throws, but really kind of reset IU as the aggressor in the game in a lot of ways. I thought that drive that you mentioned from Sarah was more of the same. And so I just thought they really seemed to recapture things in that stretch. And then that 100%, you know, sometimes those end of half runs don't carry over to the second half. That was not at all the case here. And they just came out and blitzed them right out of the locker room. And the game was pretty much over at that point. I had written down at one point that through the first eight possessions of the second half, IU'd scored 2.25 points per possession. So, yeah. I mean, and the one miss in that stretch was a wide open three that normally you'd assume Sydney's going to hit. So it was it was really a continuation of what got him rolling and got him back in control of the game at the end of the second half there at the beginning of the third, and just a dominant second half performance. I know the fourth quarter is there's subs in and all that stuff, but, you know, to give up 7 points in the fourth quarter, doesn't really matter who you're going against. I think it just spoke to the way that IU played and really, really took hold of the game there late second quarter and the entire second half.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Andy, why don't we go ahead and jump into some of our pivotal plays? I know you've been talking about some, and I have as well. So why don't we just jump into it? So what kind of pivotal plays in the beginning of the game, that first half, first quarter, second, wherever you want to jump around to, did you have noted down?
Yeah, I thought I'll go back a little bit to the second quarter, and certainly we can bounce back to the first if you want. But it was a play during that stretch. I think it was right after Chloe made that free throw where Lexi got a layup off of a great pass from McKenzie and a nice cut from her. And I thought it was, I don't think McKenzie really tried to force things. They were being really aggressive, trying to front her, get IU to throw it over the top, and then basically run two people, you know, from the back to try to intercept the pass and things like that. I thought she was pretty patient, but I thought that at least was a good play for her of didn't try to force things inside, people cutting off the ball, got an easy basket and just was one that got everybody going. And then Mac, you know, scores the first five of the second half and scored one toward the end of the first as well. So I thought she picked her spots, but the way they defended her made it a little bit tough for her to really get going. But I thought she found ways to find teammates and even just the magnetism that she has from a defensive standpoint opens up so much for other people.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, McKenzie gave us what we really needed from her today. I think defensively was a bit of a tough matchup for her, having to guard on the perimeter. But in terms of any time Fairfield tried to drive, she was there to block. And it, not just her, but the whole team. You know, I saw somebody in the chat called it a block party today. That was true. We ended up with 10 blocks today. So defensively, I thought we really picked it up and showed how our length and size was giving Fairfield a lot of problems down low. So in terms of some pivotal plays I had kind of written down in the first quarter here, where we had Lexi with a really nice pass to get it down to McKenzie late in that first quarter, where, you know, she gets her two and then gets fouled and makes her free throw, made it 17-20. And I said, you know, I wonder if we can get Mac more involved. And it didn't quite happen until, like you mentioned, later in the second quarter and really into the beginning of the second half. So I think that was somewhere where we saw some really good adjustments. I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit more when we talk in detail of the second half. But I think that, again, Coach Morin showed why she has been such a successful coach at Indiana, because she is able to go in with her coaching staff and make those type of adjustments that we generally are coming to expect to see from her. In fact, today with this win, it continues a streak that she has that anytime that Indiana has made the NCAA tournament underneath Coach Morin, they have won their opening game. So she has not lost her opening game yet as a Hoosier when they've made it to the tournament. So, so that was one of my pivotal plays as well. And just really, I think in general, it was a back and forth kind of game in that first quarter, in the second quarter. And, you know, we saw some, you know, really great defense a couple times. We had a shot clock violation. We had a huge block from Mac that we had. I think that was when we had a stare down, one of a couple from McKenzie. And I thought, you know, it just, we just were sped up. I wasn't too bad on our defense other than some of the perimeter play. We knew Fairfield was going to jack up a lot of threes. They shot over 200 threes this year, more than Indiana. So if you think Indiana takes a lot of three-pointers, Fairfield makes us look like we don't take many at all. 200 more on the season. So Anyway, overall in the first or second quarter, any other pivotal plays, Andy, that you had written down or just overall thoughts on the defense or offensive effort?
Yeah, I thought really at the beginning of the game offensively, and I think that play from Lexi that where she dropped it off to McKenzie was a good example of that. IU did a really good job of attacking the closeouts from Fairfield. Now, Fairfield was really trying to run IU off the three-point line, not give him three-point shots at all. And so I thought Sarah got a couple baskets going to the hoop that way. That dish from Lexi. So I thought IU did a good job of taking what they were trying to give them defensively, as opposed to forcing things. I thought that's really where they got into a little bit of trouble in the beginning of the second quarter was, you know, kind of taking the shots that maybe Fairfield wanted them to. But overall, I thought they did a good job of attacking in that regard. And I think defensively, it just was a little bit of an adjustment period. You knew coming in that Fairfield wanted to play that way and shoot a bunch of threes, but also trying to figure out how to guard them when you're really that spread out. As you said, McKenzie had a couple of times where she's, you know, out on people on the perimeter who aren't afraid to shoot three pointers. She's backing off just a little bit and giving them a little bit of space. So I think there was that adjustment period. I don't know that I felt like they really did anything dramatically different defensively other than, I think they contained dribblers a bit better, but it wasn't schematic. At least what I saw didn't feel it was schematic. They just locked in a little bit better on that end. I think once they got to realize what they were doing, were able to take some things away that they weren't before and able to, you know, close out on shooters more under control so they didn't get driven, because that was really what was giving up layups in the, you know, early in the game if they just got a little bit off balance and out of control. So thought they, you know, that was really the adjustment to me, was being a little bit more under control in that regard. And you know, you're going to go through hot streaks where teams do that. And I kind of was worried that was going to be the case when they banked one in toward the beginning of the third quarter. And I'm like, okay, is it going to be one of those type of nights? And it was not, but you know, team yeah. that shoots him. That's why we talk about that so much. It's like a team like that, that's really outmatched. Like that's how you bring some variability into the equation. If you can make a bunch and put yourself in good position and go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting. I was wondering how we'd match up, especially, you know, where Fairfield don't really list some of their kind of posts and forwards as forwards on their lineup. I guess they call them roadrunners. Like you can even actually see that on their webpage, because they really want to play that five out, and you really saw that. And I was curious how that we would kind of match up. And it kind of gave us some problems. You know, we've kind of had that problem, especially with really athletic guards. So, you know, Janelle Brown in particular, I thought we needed to keep an eye on. And, you know, first basket went to her right out of the gate. You know, so I said, you need to watch out. And she ended up getting 19 points, but, you know, it was on 7 of 15 shooting. So I think, you know, we found a way to make it a little more difficult for her than what she has had to face this year. So let's move maybe to the second half, Andy. What kind of things jumped out to you? Probably more in the third quarter. I think by the time we got to the fourth quarter, there wasn't a whole lot of pivotal plays we needed. We hadn't felt at that point, you know, opened up a good lead. It was 49-64 at the end of the third. But how about the third quarter? What jumped out to you in that quarter?
It was a team effort there at the beginning of the second half when they went on that run. McKenzie scored those couple baskets. Sarah made a three. Chloe made a three. Sarah got to the line. Sydney made a three. Sarah back to the line and things like that. I think the common thread through most of it, though, was Sarah. I mean, she is just an absolute assassin out there shooting the ball. I mean, took a couple heat checks that I think everybody was more than willing to to watch. And just even a couple of the ones she hit early fourth quarter, just the way they talked about this on the broadcast, the way that she's able to read screens and move just to give herself enough space to be able to step back and get shots off. But she was just absolutely phenomenal. It's only been a couple of years with her in an IU uniform, but one of the most enjoyable players to watch for me. Just you know, kind of unassuming, seems pretty quiet, and then just through the course of the game feels like she just goes out there to rip the other team's heart out as she's doing it. Yeah. So with a smile on her face. So yeah, just awesome performance from her, and the kind of offensive explosion that you're going to need people to step up and make if you're going to make a deep tournament run. So awesome quarter and second half from her.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the biggest pivotal play for me actually came from Sydney, who I thought overall Sydney had a pretty quiet game today. You know, she ended up with 7 points and again, with leading the team in rebounds, which is what we've kind of come to expect from her. But overall, I thought it was a fairly quiet day. Not that I don't think she played poorly, just not, I mean, we didn't need her to do more than we really got from her today, but with the way that Sarah and McKenzie were playing, but a pivotal play for me came at 5:49 in the third quarter when Sydney got her first basket, and it was a three-pointer, and that gave us our first double-digit lead at 43-54. And I don't think we ever really looked back from there, to be honest. Like, I think that would, to me, and that's why I put it down as a pivotal play. Again, Sydney wasn't there to give us a double-digit points today, and we didn't need that from her. And we haven't, you know, needed that from her on a consistent basis all year. It was a quiet game offensively, but that bucket, I thought, really opened things up for us. And I don't think we ever really looked back from that play in that third quarter. But overall, what were your thoughts on Sydney's play today? Again, I don't think she had a poor game at all. It was just a little quiet offensively compared to some of the other games we've seen from her. But again, I thought she gave us what we needed. But what were your thoughts from Sydney?
I thought the same thing. I didn't feel like she forced anything. I think she missed a couple open shots that she would normally make. I thought she got hammered a couple times going to the basket and they didn't call anything. Yeah. So a little bit of a mixed bag in that regard. But I thought she did a good job of picking her spots when she needed to be aggressive, was in the right place defensively and some of those things. So I think if they had enough balance where Yarden was able to contribute in multiple quarters, Chloe was doing the same. Lexi came in, made some plays. I just thought you were getting enough contributions from people where she could fade a little bit into the background and it doesn't really harm you in any meaningful way. So I thought she played fine, did the things that she needed to do, and in all likelihood there'll be another game where they need her to step up and do a little bit more, and she'll be able to. I think that's the good thing about this team, is that you don't need everybody to score, you know, 15 points a night to be able to to succeed. And so there'll be nights that are hers and nights that are somebody else's, and but otherwise, yeah, I didn't think she forced anything, which usually is kind of what I look at least in that scenario of like, all right, if I think somebody didn't play well, was it because they were really trying to do too much? And never really felt that way with her. And I think she gets a couple fouls called on him a couple other times. She's, you know, easily into double figures, and you don't think anything of it.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. When you have your other four starters all scoring double digits, again, we didn't need her to also put that up for us today. I didn't have any other pivotal plays. Andy, how about you? Anything else you want to touch on in the games, or are you ready to jump into some numbers?
I mean, this can be a good segue into the numbers in some ways, but just the block numbers. I mean, like you said, 10 from 6 different players. And I think when they really seize control of the game, I didn't do a good enough job of writing down who blocked what shot when, but they really had a stretch there where they had, like, I think it's 4 blocks in 5 different possessions. And then forced an air ball in the 5th. So you know, anybody that Fairfield tried to go at, IU seemed like they had an answer. And I think that spoke to how well they were playing defensively. But to see that many in that little stretch there early second half, I thought was impressive. But yeah, otherwise, I think we hit most of the key plays with the players we talked about.
Yep, absolutely. Well, cool. Well, we already mentioned a couple times the 10 blocks, which is, again, a nice notable number to kick off here this segment, but not one we usually talk about with this team. You know, we'll get maybe a few here and there, but I don't think I've ever remember us getting 10 blocks in recent history at all. But what other numbers, Andy, jump out to you from the game?
I mean, the defensive numbers end up looking pretty incredible, really. I usually do for the men's games. I kind of like try to chart stuff through the game, and yep, they had Fairfield had up to that point, or from that point after the media timeout in the second quarter to the end of the game. So like a pretty long, a pretty good number of possessions. I think it ends up being like 40 some possessions. They scored 0.56 points per possession. Like just ridiculous. They scored 0.37 in the fourth quarter.
Right.
And it was just like, I don't know that there was, you know, hardly any times in that stretch where they scored on back-to-back possessions. And that was really what turned the game. I think he knew IU was going to be able to score on the other end and eventually kind of turn it on there, as they did toward the end of that quarter. But that to me was really what the defense was, where, you know, over the course of the full second half, they gave up 0.59 points per possession, outscored them 51-22 overall. I just thought the defense was dominant. The blocks certainly speak to that. And I thought they had some good steals as well. I thought Lexi read passing lanes well on a couple occasions and picked up a couple steals. You know, they end up with 5 steals on the game. And the other number, they mentioned this on the broadcast as well, IU ends up with 25 assists on 31 made field goals. At one point in the second half, they were 12 for 12 on on assists for and made baskets. So I think they ended up 14 of 17 in the second half. So, you know, I think you look at the one number, they were dominant defensively. You look at the other, they moved the ball, got to people where they could score and put them in great position, and had an assist rate that was off the charts. So, you know, a couple top end numbers really on both ends of the court.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, those all stuck out to me as well. And then again, on the positive end was, you know, just keeping, like you mentioned, Fairfield locked in that second half in particular. So again, for Fairfield, their field goal percentage in the first half was 41%. They ended the game at only 31.8, so 32%. So we held them well below what they were doing in that first half. And so once I thought Fairfield wasn't making as many shots, outside shots, they did try to drive on us, and they just weren't going to be able to do that with our length that we had over them. So that was definitely some things that jumped out to me. A little bit on the negative side, which it's not too terrible. We did end up with 13 turnovers. And the only reason I bring that up is that, unfortunately, most of them, five of them, almost half, came from Yarden. And overall, I thought Yarden had a fairly good game. You know, she was kind of up and down. I thought she started off the game really well and on fire. And I thought she was really active, actually. She was the only one who made multiple three-pointers in that first half with two of our three. But then we kind of lost her again in that second half. But overall, I thought she played a pretty good game. It just was a little bit, again, on her decision-making around her turnovers again. Five turnovers, I thought, was a little more than I wanted to see from Yarden. But overall, I thought Yarden had a fairly nice game for us. And again, gave us kind of similar to what we were talking about with Sydney. I think she gave us what we need. So that was just a little bit I saw from her. So same thing on the opposite side for us with field goal. We shot only 41% in the first half, and most of that was our three-point shooting at only 25%, 3 of 12. But we ended up the game with a field goal percentage of 50.8 and a three-point field goal percentage of 38.5. So I'm not sure what they talked about in the locker room, but whatever it was, definitely turned around their shooting woes that they were having in that first half. So overall, again, just that second half, like you've mentioned a couple of times and we've talked about it, I think both defensively and offensively, we came out of halftime in particular, and it just really ratcheted up on both ends of the court. What other numbers, Andy, jump out to you that we should talk about?
Yeah, I'd be curious to go back to some of the turnover numbers. I feel like about half of those were offensive fouls of one kind or another.
Yeah, at least one was, I know where Yarden
yeah,
was.
And a couple yeah, of one of Yarden, yeah, multiple moving screens I felt like got called, a couple of which were a little debatable. So I do think some of it was things like that. And I thought some of the others were just really trying to, you know, force the ball into McKenzie at times, where they were really trying to thread a needle in there, the way that Fairfield was playing and trying to lob the ball in. Like, it had to be almost perfect to really get in there. And so I think sometimes it was, I think Yarden did that at least once, maybe twice as you went through that. But I think some of it was just ill-advised passes in that scenario. And some of it was also probably, like I said, some of the offensive fouls. I don't know that that's transferable to other games as you look through it that way. But I thought that was at least my quick opinion on some of the turnover stuff. Otherwise, you know, what was interesting is for 13, and I guess this is maybe not surprising given that Fairfield didn't score a whole lot in general, but off the 13 turnovers, they ended up with just 2 points versus yeah. IU got 17 points off the 12 turnovers from Fairfield, out-rebounded them by 15 bench points, had some nice contributions there in the fourth quarter with Lily getting on the board a little bit. Lexi, we talked about a little bit earlier, 16 to 10 there, points in the paint, 40 to 18. Again, not super shocking given how many threes that Fairfield came into the game wanting to take, but you know, thought a lot of good individual and team numbers as you look down the list there. And yeah, lots of things to build on. Also outscoring 14 by 14 points from the free throw line, and really on three pointers, they only made one more three pointer than IU did on seven fewer attempts. So for as much as
right,
you know, they're trying to shoot a bunch so they can outscore you from there, they only outscore IU by three from the 3 point line. And really that was not a factor at all, other than that was where so many of their shots came from.
That's right. And yeah. And they took more 3-point shots than us by 7 too. So only one more than us and one make more, but it took them more to get there, ending at only 33% from 3-point land for them versus our 38. Again, just, I thought that turnaround for us shooting wise was really great to see. So maybe let's talk just a little bit about the bench, Andy. You mentioned them. And of course, most of the run we got from them, they ended up with 16 points from us, 7 of them from Lexi Bargesser. Most of those points kind of came late in that fourth quarter. But overall, I thought I saw some nice production from our bench before even that big run in the third quarter. And specifically, I thought Lexi and Jules coming off the bench gave us some really nice minutes, and Lily did as well in that first half. But really happy to see all of our starters being able to sit for at least, I think, the last 4 or 4.5 minutes of the fourth quarter, especially with the quick turnaround coming back and playing on Monday. But overall, what was your thought on the bench and what we got from them today?
Yeah, overall, it looks like Sarah is the only one that played more than 29 minutes, and even she was only at 31. So I think that's certainly a good thing, and something that's kind of what you want in these scenarios is you got to steal rest whenever you can, especially for a team that relies heavily on the starters, has been a little banged up and things like that. So I think that was certainly a positive of the way they took control in the third quarter. But I thought Lexi did a lot of good things. I mean, a pretty full stat line, 7 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, 2 steals and a block in 22 minutes of action. I thought she did a little bit of everything. And I think she's got a pretty clear role on the team, plays it extremely well, and comes in and just does those little things. She'll drive when there's an opening, but she knows she's not going to step out and shoot a bunch of shots. She's in there to try to get other people involved, play good defense, and do all the little things. And I thought she was fantastic in that role. Again, you need people like that. You don't need everybody to go out there and think, oh, I got to score this number of points and all those kinds of things. And she's the perfect fit for that, where you can surround her with 4 of the top players on the team, and she's going to be just fine. She's enough of a threat to be out there, but really does a great job of setting other people up. So was really impressed with her. I thought Jules played some good defense. I mentioned that earlier, in stretches in the first half, was physical and really made Fairfield take tough shots inside when they would drive to the basket when she was in there toward the end of the second half. And I thought Lily, you know, she got those couple, you know, finally got rewarded with those couple baskets later, but I thought she'd come in and given some good minutes, had a couple blocks of her own, and played well in that regard. So I thought they got some solid contributions. And as you said, we're just able to eat some minutes too, which at this time of year is as important as anything.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, to that point, only Sarah played over 30 minutes today. She played 31 minutes, and everybody else of our starters were under that mark. So Chloe Moore McNeil with 29 and Yarden with 28. But, you know, being able to have McKenzie and Sydney, you know, with their nagging injuries, only played 26 and 27 minutes, I thought was really big for us. But Andy, I don't have any other numbers in this segment. We might get into a few more in the awards area, but do you have any others before we move on to game ball?
Nope, I think we hit them.
Well, with that, we will go ahead and move on to game ball. So if you are watching on our YouTube feed, you'll see at the bottom here, we put up a scroll with the number of game balls for each player we've had so far. And Mackenzie Holmes, no surprise, leads the way with 13. Sarah Scalia with 6. Sydney Parrish with 4. Yarden Gozone and Chloe Moore McNeil each with 3. So Andy, you're a guest. As always, we like to let our guests go first. So who do you have for your game ball? Hopefully, you know, we might have to have a lot of debate, I think, on this one, but you know, let's throw it out there and see how it goes.
Yeah, I think there might be maybe more debate or additional choices for the other one, but this one, Sarah made it pretty easy. I just, like I said, she's just an absolute joy to watch. She just seems to kind of glide around the court, get to her spots, make shots, just make such tough shots, and just seems like she's certainly enjoying it and soaking up her last minutes of her college basketball experience. But you know, just still, you can kind of see the soft-spokenness of her, but getting a little bit more like emotional and trying to fire the crowd up and whatever. And you know that some of that probably does not come super naturally to her, but she just looks like she's having fun. And it certainly, I mean, there were a couple times I think the last 2 threes, I just kind of laughed out loud the way she moved around, took what seemed like a really tough shot and just drilled it, right at somebody. It was, just, I don't know. She's a fun one to watch for me, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. That was an easy one to make unanimous here with Sarah. And to your point, you know, we've had her now for almost the full 2 years playing with Indiana, and she's always been very, you know, kind of stoic and not real showing a lot of emotion. And I think especially in that Iowa game, seeing her get teed up for the first time ever in her career, not just this year, but like ever in her 5 years of playing, it has really seemed to light something within her. And you could see that in her play today, especially in that third quarter. I think she, in particular, between her and McKenzie, they both came out and said, look, this is our last run and we're not going to go out like this. And they just both, I thought, really took control in that second half. And Sarah just in particular showed so much emotion, and I love seeing that from her. So that's an easy one too for today for our game ball. So with that will give Sarah her seventh game ball on the year. All right, well, we'll move over to our Grace Berger hardest worker. Again, we have quite a long list here to get through of different players who have gotten the Grace Berger hardest worker award this year. So we have Lexi Bargesser and Sydney Parrish, each with 6, Mackenzie Holmes with 5, and Chloe Moore McNeil with 5, Sarah Scalia, Lene Beaumont, each and Lily Meister, each with 2, and Yarden Garzón with 1. So yeah, I think to your point, Andy, you could go a couple of different ways. I have one person in my head that I think I finally landed on for this one, but who did you have for your final vote for hardest worker?
Yeah, this one was tough, which is a good problem to have. Certainly yep. Beats the alternative of not having good choices for it. I tended to lean toward Chloe. Just thought the way that she forced the action a little bit there in that set stretch of second half kind of sparked everybody. You're always going to get a solid effort from her defensively, and in a game where the team really turned things defensively, I think she was certainly a part of that. Had a block, did not have a steal in the game, only had 1 turnover, 6 assists, 3 rebounds, 13 points. Did kind of what you expect from her, a little bit of everything. So I lean toward her, although Lexi was the other person that I thought about just because of some of the reasons that we talked about with her. But I'll defer to the older player and the starter and give it to Chloe. But I thought lots of good options for that one. And I really thought as a team, they did a really good job on Janelle Brown. She was a fun player to watch as well. Like just played her absolute butt off the entire game. Even when they were down, chasing people down, doing whatever. And she was a tough person to guard. I thought as a group, tried different people on her, different things, switched different people onto her. I thought they did a good job. And so maybe I'll give Chloe a little bit of the nod for that reason as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know Chloe and Sarah split a lot of time on her. I had the same final 2, Andy, that you did between Lexi and Chloe Moore McNeil. So you already talked a lot about Chloe with your final vote. And I see here in our Workaholics chat that a lot of people are voting for Chloe. So I'm going to go ahead and throw my vote to Lexi. It'll end up going to Chloe here with the tiebreaker going to the Workaholics. But I do want to throw a great vote to Lexi because I really thought coming in off the bench, because those 7 points, and by the way, 3 of those were free throws, which if you have been watching this team all year and you saw Lexi at the beginning of the year shooting free throws, you would never expect that she could go 3 for 4 in a game. That's definitely where I'm at with Lexi. I think she has made some really great strides, and I think it came out today. I thought her defense too was really great. You know, we had she had that emphatic block into the other team's bench at the end of the third quarter. That was just a lot of fun to see. So I'm going to give my vote as an honorary vote to Lexi, but Chloe will get the game ball for today, and that will give Chloe her 6th game ball on the year. So now we have a 3-way tie between Chloe, Sydney Parrish, and Lexi Bargesser, all with 6 on the year. Andy, we also have been doing a record watch, even though we've kind of have had McKenzie already breaking the record in terms of most points scored ever. So, but we're watching at least her kind of try to chase down Calvert Cheney. I think with, you know, her injury and then the short stint in the Big Ten tournament, that's probably out of reach. But the other person we have been watching is Sarah Scalia. So today Sarah had 5 3-point baskets made. That gave her 100 on the season. So she is now 7 3-point shots made away from breaking or tying Steve Alford's record for most 3-pointers in a single season. So we'll keep an eye on Sarah Scalia and see how she does on Monday. So speaking of that, we will talk a little bit about what is coming up. So what's next for Indiana is that they will face the winner of Oklahoma and Florida Gulf Coast. That game will be on Monday. They do not release the times for the women's games until later in the day, so we're not quite sure when they will actually play. We just know it will be Monday, so we should find out later today what time that is. I think what I've been hearing is that most of the games will not start until 4 o'clock Eastern on Monday afternoon. So we'll kind of see there, but not having a real opponent. Well, we have a real opponent. We don't know which real opponent we have. Right now, Florida Gulf Coast and Oklahoma just tipped off. Florida Gulf Coast is up by 3. Not really able to break that down. But we'll see. I think that game personally, between those two teams is going to be an interesting one, kind of similar to what we saw today with Fairfield and Indiana. They just play very different styles of basketball. Florida Gulf Coast is definitely one I think can put up some points on Oklahoma. So we'll see as the game progresses. Maybe we'll try to, if we want, flip that game on and see how we could match up with either of those teams. But I don't know a whole lot about either one right now enough to go into in-depth. So I could see that one being a really close game between Oklahoma and FGCU. Do you know anything much about either one of those teams, Andy? I don't know a whole lot.
I probably know even less than you do. So no, I don't think I cannot add very much. I think that's on ESPN News. So everybody can develop their own scouting report and figure it out for us. But I do not know exactly anything about either one. I definitely follow the IU program and the Big Ten to a certain extent. And anybody outside of that who's probably not talked about as one of the top teams, I have absolutely no idea. So I won't pretend otherwise on here.
Nope, me too. I'll poke in on some games here and there, like high profile games with South Carolina and LSU and Tennessee and things like that. But I haven't watched either of these teams at all, so I'm not even going to guess. So, but speaking of the Big Ten, Jeff and I have usually been giving an update on how the Big Ten is faring. So we'll talk specifically. Yesterday, the Big Ten went 2-2 in their tournament games. So Michigan State lost to North Carolina. That game started out North Carolina actually taking a big double digit lead over Michigan State. Michigan State battled back, but did end up losing by 3. Ohio State handily beat Maine 80-57. Iowa State came back from the largest deficit ever, having a 20-point deficit to Maryland, and ended up beating them by 7 in one of the evening games last night. And then Nebraska had a really tough game with Texas A&M, but they pulled it out, winning by 2. Then today we have 3 Big Ten games. Obviously, Indiana, one of them, we know about that. Michigan and Kansas are playing right now. They are in overtime, and Kansas is up by 5. And then Iowa is playing Holy Cross, and they are up by 18 at halftime. So that's kind of what's going on with the Big Ten in the NCAA tournament. But Andy, why don't we go ahead and just wrap everything up? So what are your final thoughts on today and the Indiana's opening game of the NCAA tournament?
I think a good one to get under their belt, be able to win the first round game convincingly. But I think I think it's always hard. You go out in these tournament games, you're playing at home, you're, probably the memories of last year with everybody a little bit and played a little bit tight in the beginning. It seemed like kind of fell into what Fairfield wanted to do. But I really thought once they settled in, they took control of the game and never looked back. And so I think you can see that sometimes where teams come out and, kind of play pretty even a little bit there at the beginning. And then, the talent kind of won out and IU really, really locked in defensively. And I think that's what they're going to have to do as they go forward. We know this team can score. They're going to find ways to do that against just about anybody. I think it just matters of, some of the games they've struggled more this year are ones where they haven't played as well on the defensive end. But you see that ability is there. That's, from a philosophical standpoint, something that they really want to stand for and they have stood for over the course of Terry Morin's tenure. So I think that's a good springboard for them, ideally heading into these other rounds, to really be able to establish themselves on that end. Like I said, they got plenty of scorers on this team. They'll figure that out on a night by night basis. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of teams that are going to be able to totally shut them down. Might be able to shut one player down, but you're not going to be able to shut them all down. And so I think the defense is really what's going to be key to a tournament run, certainly to the next round for them. But, just a joy to watch, happy for the seniors to be able to go out, get a couple more games in Assembly Hall and perform so well. And like I said, just watching Sarah do her thing has been really fun. And she's really come into her own. I know you talked about the technical and all that stuff. Like, just kind of, I think sometimes you think as people come in from the whether it's a transfer portal or whatever else, that they're kind of like fully formed and they are who they are and whatever. And I think her evolution over her even 2 years at IU has been pretty fun to watch, and just a great performance from her on the NCAA stage, and hopefully, you know, one of many that we still have left to enjoy over the course of the season, but a good way to get things rolling in the NCAA tournament for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it'd be interesting to hear if they asked the Fairfield coach in the postgame press about that, Sarah, because the coach was actually an assistant at Minnesota while Sarah was there in her last year. Sarah's last year, she was the interim coach and was the head coach for Minnesota before she got this coaching job at Fairfield, and Sarah transferred. And Sarah had been quoted before the game as saying she was very integral into Sarah's progression as a college player. She was her position coach when she was at Minnesota, and they had a really close relationship. So I'm sure that was also bittersweet for Fairfield's coach to see Sarah kind of light it up against them today, but I'm sure she'll be cheering for her the rest of the tournament as well. So I agree with you, Andy. I think the key for our team this year is going to be two things in particular for our next game on Monday. Can we come out and have a bunch tighter defense and from the beginning? The competition is just going to ratchet up really quick. You know, Fairfield, hat tip to them. I know they had a 29-game winning streak coming in, only lost one game this year, but their strength of schedule made it such that they hadn't played a whole lot of competition. I think they had one team in the that was ranked at 61 was their highest, and I think they lost that game. That was their one loss. So they didn't really have a whole lot to test them in, and I think we just definitely had the deeper talent today. And it was okay. We were able to overcome that, you know, kind of defense that we had in the first half, but we cannot have that playing on Monday in particular, as our competition, as mentioned, is probably just going to increase twofold, if not more, going forward. I agree with you on the offensive end. Usually we can get our shots, but that is something too we've seen in a couple of our losses where we go cold. And so we're going to have to make sure that three-point shooting is more like the second half and less like the first half, which is a no-brainer, and I get that, and easy to see. To say, you know, sitting here in my living room of my house. So easy for me, harder to execute. But those are a couple of things I'll be watching for in particular on Monday when we watch them play. So those are kind of some of my final thoughts. So again, we'll talk up next, our return or upcoming schedule. As mentioned, the women will play again on Monday. We don't have opponent. We don't have time. We don't have TV schedule. Andy and I both were talking before the game. we both have to work. They like us to work and still give us a paycheck. So we will be determining when our next game is, our next show is rather, and if Andy's able to join and fill in again, or if it'll be me with somebody else, but I will definitely be here with somebody. I don't know what time it will be. So just keep an eye on our Twitter and on our Substack to find out what we're going to be doing there. I'll try to keep you up to date as soon as I know schedules. But if you do want to see us do the show live, you can be part of our live chat. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@backhomenetwork. You can also be part of our private community as well. You can find out more at assemblycall.substack.com. A special thanks to John Ringer of Rig Design for designing our logos. A big thank you to Bob Thompson for some of the music you heard in the show. A huge thanks to Andy for jumping in with me while Jeff is off in Spain with his students over there on a school trip. So appreciate you, Andy, being here. Always enjoy your analysis and commentary. So really big thank you to you. But most of all, thank you to everyone listening live or after the fact. We will be back to talk IU Hoops with you again on Monday. Until then, keep your elbow in, your eyes on the rim, and let's go Hoosiers. Well, cool. Well, that was fun. That's a nice way to start off the tournament with a 33-point win.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was much better than when it was tight at the beginning. I'll take it. I was like, yeah, just go ahead and take control. So
yeah,
happy to do that.
Cool. Well, Andy, thanks again. Really appreciate you helping me out and filling in. I love having you on here. You're absolutely one of my favorite people to listen to on Assembly Call. So it's great to have you over here as well. So appreciate it.
Happy to help. I'm sure once the NCAA solicits you and I's opinion on when to have the game on Monday, we can figure out what we're going to do next.
That's right. We'll go get our
emails. But we'll stay in touch and figure it out. Yeah,
absolutely. Exactly.
Exactly.
Well, good. Well, I'll let you go. And everyone in the chat, have a great rest of your weekend. Enjoy watching all the basketball games out there as well. There should be some great women games and great women matchups as well as on the men's side. So you should have no problem finding basketball to watch and binge out on. So take care, everyone.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody.